In this episode, we're talking all about self-sabotage, what it looks like, what it actually means to self-sabotage. There's 8 different types of ways that we can self-sabotage, and then how to move from self-sabotaging to self-supporting. And we have self-sabotaging coach and guide, Ashley Bowden, to walk us through this conversation. And I'm really excited and honored to have gotten to talk with her and to get to bring her expertise and story to you, because not only will you learn something about your self-sabotaging style and ways to navigate through that, you're also going to hear from her as an Enneagram type 4. And just for anybody who's newer to the Enneagram or a refresher, our type 4s are also called the individualist, the artist, the romantic. They are the ones that make things look beautiful. And if you have seen Ashley's feed on Instagram or her website, that could not be more true for her. Our type 4s are really motivated. They're running towards this desire to be extraordinary, to be accepted for their authentic self, to be unique. And they have this superpower, unlike any other type on the Enneagram, to be able to sit with really difficult, hard feelings. And there's the rest of us are going to want to sit down and try and problem solve with whoever's coming to us typically with a problem. And they're 100% comfortable sitting in those hard feelings. So you can imagine what an amazing friend, coach, leader these type 4s would make. And then the thing that they're running away from is the feeling that they're ordinary, mundane, not belonging for who they really are. And they tend to be a little bit more introverted, and they're not ones that, you know, you typically think of as natural leaders. And that is exactly why I wanted to talk with Ashley, for lots of reasons, but this is one of them, because there's, you know, our type 3s, I love them. 8s, obviously. 7s have a special place in my heart as well. All 3 of those types tend to be tagged as natural leaders. They're all in that assertive energy category. So leadership might come natural for them. The way they go about it might be very different. And so those of you who don't resonate with those types might be trying to force yourself to make those strategies work for you that have worked for some of those other types, but it's not. And so you're either, you know, depleting your energy, it's not working for you, you're getting frustrated. And so what Ashley is going to share today is a breath of fresh air, hopefully for you, if you've been struggling with that, on how to create a business in your own way that matches with your unique personality and your unique energy and your style. And she has this concept around a slow business that you'll learn more about too when you listen. But I thought that this was an important interview to have, as with all of the types, just to give you a different aspect of leadership and what a business owner, a different way that a business owner might look like versus the hustle, or learning about a specific strategy that worked for somebody really well, but just may not be working for you because you have different energy, you have different goals, you have different values, and that's okay. And she just offers a different way to look at it. And her way may not work for you either, but hopefully it gets the juices flowing, the ideas flowing, about other ways that you could show up in your business, that you could start getting visible, that you could sell your offers, that you could build a community in a way that really feels aligned, that actually gives you energy instead of take that away. So I know that was a little bit of a long-winded intro, but I'm going to be bringing you, you're going to be learning from other types that may not naturally be thought of as a leader or a business owner, but they're going to be sharing with you how they've made it work for them so that you can not only get inspiration, but very practical ideas for how to build your own business in a way that you get to run, not runs you. So enjoy this interview with Ashley Bowden. Welcome to another episode of the Enneagram MBA podcast. This is a show for aspiring and growing entrepreneurs and company leaders who are ready to get to know themselves, who are ready to get to know and really understand their clients and their teams, and who are ready to learn how to get known as they package and promote their expertise and services in a way that truly aligns with their personality, motives, and goals. So grab your notebook or open your notes app, and I will see you in class. Okay, Ashley. So I'm really excited to talk to you because I've had a lot of threes volunteers. I've had a lot of eight volunteers and haven't got a lot of type fours. So I was excited to get to connect with you and learn about your life journey as a business owner, experiencing it kind of through the lens of a type four Enneagram. So what about the four, just to kind of kick things off, most resonates with you?
Yeah, I love being a four. You know, I've definitely never been someone, I wish I was a different type. I'm like, I love this type. And the parts that I think really resonate with me are, you know, one, having a really deep internal world and just a lot of emotions constantly present. As well, one of the things I've always been really drawn to about it too is the love for like visuals and aesthetics. I get a lot of comments always on my brand. About the visuals of my brand and the intentionality. I think that was something that I also really, those were the top two, I would say, that like really jumped off the page for me, as well as maybe a little bit more of a drawing to, sometimes always feeling like a sense of scarcity. And sometimes in some way, like also really has drawn me to the work that I do around self-sabotage, because I'm so very interested and excited to explore the darker side of things. Mm-hmm. And like, tell me about what hurts. Like,
what's
So yeah, those are probably the top ones.
Well, for those of you who don't already follow Ashley on social media, you have to start, because not only is her content and her message, it's just so inspirational and helpful, but your visual branding, exactly, like your graphics are beautiful. Your website is beautiful. And I was like, yes, I see the four creativity for sure. And also fours have the greatest gift of all the types to be able to sit with those hard, sometimes uncomfortable feelings. So I could see why you are so good at the work that you do. I know that you had also mentioned that you most identify with at this point in your life with a wing three. How does that play in versus that five energy? And do you ever see that five energy rolling in?
Well, it's interesting because a couple of years ago I ran these camps, and you know, the Enneagram was really popular, like it was really starting to gain popularity in these years, 2018, 2019. So it was always a big topic. And so many people could not believe I was four, because they had this image in their mind that fours are like moody or withdrawn or really serious. And so I remember someone came up to me and they said, thank you for showing people that fours can be fun. And so a lot of people actually thought I was a seven.
Okay.
I have these duality of sides, like let's talk about what's hard and then also like let's laugh and just keep laughing. And so I just thought it was just interesting, like a lot of the conversations that happened around the Enneagram in such an intimate experience where you're like with each other, like in the middle of the woods. No, it's like no like facades or anything, right? But the three, I think for me, the Wayne three, I really resonate with this, like let's make it happen. I think my entrepreneurial side really resonates with the type three. Definitely have a very strong go-getter side. And I'm not okay with like just like living life. Like, I'm always, like, thinking, like, what can we do next? How can we mobilize the people? You know, that type of thing.
Mobilize them.
And I'm also very, like, I'm very outgoing. I'm very people-centric. And so, and I'm not very, I don't stay often in my head in terms of, I stay in my head in terms of my feelings and analyzing my emotions and being like, what's happening here emotionally. But I, other than that, I'm never inside my head. And that's what empowers me and sort of enables me to take a lot of risks in business.
Yes. And the 2, 3s, 4s are in that feeling heart center triad. So it sounds like that feels very true for you with, yeah, with your feelings leading.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how did you even get into the Enneagram? I know that it's been popular. It's kind of trendy. How did you first discover it, and what has it done for you in your business life and just in your life in general?
Yeah, I actually had heard about it just a little bit before it got popular on social media anyway. And I remember a friend had told me about it. And I remember I went to like the bookstore here and I was like looking through this book, and like the only book that they had on the Enneagram and on the shelves was like more of like a textbook-ish.
Okay.
Like a manual almost. And I was like, find me the 4. And I was like, this is me. And I think, you know, too, as a type 4, like, it's like this feeling. And I know this can show up for a lot of people too, of like, oh, I feel so understood. Someone finally sees me, you know. That was really an empowering experience for me. In terms of, you know, bringing it more into my work and business, well, because I'm so passionate about things like self-acceptance, self-compassion, and getting to know ourselves and the patterns that we continue to live out or walk in, you know, the Enneagram can do a really good job of highlighting what some of those could be. But really coming at it from this perspective of like, I have a lot more compassion on myself for this, knowing that this is here, being able to see it through those eyes versus, you know, this is something I need to fix, or this is something, or even this is something, this is just who I am, deal with it. But yeah, using it, being able to use it as a tool of self-acceptance and self-growth. And then also I think, you know, really being like, yeah, these are the things that make me great. Like, these are the strengths that I have. And can I lean into these things a little bit more in my business to really start to own, you know, own it in some of these spaces?
Yeah, I love that. Because, you know, it's really fun to learn about your type and to go like exactly what you said, like flip to the book or scroll through to your type description. But there is a gap between that awareness and then application, intentional change, which I know you had mentioned too. It's allowed you to kind of stay in your lane and do business your own way, which you have developed this beautiful and really unique, which I know you probably love hearing as a 4, way of helping others, you know, grow and build their business, build an intentional life. And so I know one of your pillars is self-sabotage. And so I'm curious, because I'm sure we can all relate to this, and we all have maybe an idea of how we do this for ourselves, but being that this is kind of, you're the expert in this area, what are some of the most common like self-sabotaging actions or thoughts that you see your students and clients having to deal with?
Yeah, so there are definitely certain self-sabotage behavior cycles, etc., that show up the most often, I think, for creatives and entrepreneurs. But I have identified sort of 8 types. And so I'll just mention them all. Why not, right?
Yeah, that would be perfect. Yes, I'm going to get my I'm going to get my notebook out and take notes right along with our listeners here. So
Yeah. So the first, first just knowing too that the way the lens in which I approach self-sabotage is that self-sabotage is about self-safety. And so we self-sabotage not because we hate ourselves, but actually really hard to love and support ourselves. It just might be an outdated way of doing it. So when we look at each of these types, we're really looking at like, what is the, you know, the belief in here almost of like, this will keep me safe. So the perfector is, you know, your classic like perfectionism. And this is simply like, I am safest when things are perfect. And if they're not, I'm vulnerable to criticism. It's a big one. Then we have the people pleaser. I feel safest when other people are happy. It feels dangerous, you know, if someone could be upset with you. This one could show up a lot in business and a lot in relationships. Then we have the overthinker. This one is, I feel safest when other people tell me what to do. So this one is like, they're doing all the Googling, they're doing all the researching, or they're constantly hiring people, but they don't really trust themselves.
Oh gosh, I see. Yeah, I see that one a lot in myself and others. Yeah.
The overworker is, you know, I feel safest when I'm busy. You know, and that I think that that one can show up from a bunch of different routes. Either like, I'm scared to see what I'll find if I embrace stillness. Also can come from a worthiness thing, like I don't feel worthy of rest. Or it also can really come from scarcity. If I'm not constantly working, I'm not safe because I won't be provided for. Then we have the assumer. This one is, I feel safest when things are familiar. And so if they're going to go into a situation where they don't know what's going to happen, that's literally terrifying. So they'll make these, normally the assumer, it often operates in the mind. And so this type will say things like, I'm not going to start a business because I could never be successful. You're creating that sense of familiarity in something that feels unfamiliar. Then we have the shamer, which is my type. The shamer is, I feel safest when I feel bad. So when I feel good, when things are going well, when I'm experiencing success, that feels really dangerous. And normally this is because, you know, like you, maybe you grew up in a home where you were not celebrated, or when things were going well, that it's like something catastrophic was about to happen. Or when your parents were really nice to you, it was like something was going to switch. All of those can be ways that one can show up. The procrastinator. I feel safest when things are in chaos. Looking for that little bit of intensity, you know, and this one can really impact the body too, can really lead to things like burnout and exhaustion and always needing that really intense shot of adrenaline and chaos to make things happen or to get moving. And did I say them all? Did you write them down?
I did. This sounds like one... I think one more.
Oh yeah.
I have seven. And what was it?
The guardian.
Oh, the guardian. Okay.
Yeah. So this one is, I feel safest when I don't have to be vulnerable or people are far from me. You know, and this one I would say dominantly shows up relationally. And in a lot of the work with my clients in more of the entrepreneurial space, it can show up a lot with like, one of the ones I've noticed it shows up a lot with is like, if someone's constantly hiring people and they just keep saying like, no one's really good at what they do. Is it that? Or it's really scary to have someone intimately close to something that you worked really hard on and that you love. So yeah, those are the eight types.
Okay. And I know you had mentioned that these somewhat overlap with our Enneagram types. So I know that if you're listening and already have an idea of what your type is, you're probably going to see yourself in one or two of these specifically. I have some other questions I want to ask you, Ashley, but just because I know sometimes starting and taking that leap can be the hardest part of venturing out on your own. And I just want to take a step back and ask you about how you got started and what you're doing right now, because this is such, you know your audience so well, you've created your own frameworks and your own programs. And I'm assuming that didn't just happen overnight. And I would love just to hear like where you kind of started this journey and how you've ended up to where you are right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, like most creatives, it was a very diluted process. You know, I've been doing my own, running my own business full time since 2014, December 2014. And so through the years I've done, it was a lot of like figuring it out and doing a lot of different things. The thing that sort of launched me into it was my love for community, my love for creating spaces and gathering people and really discovering that I had a gift for it. And you know, it was that 2014, fall 2014 was my first experience of making money online and that it was possible. That was all I needed. I just needed that one experience. And then I was going to find ways to recreate that and build that. But it took me a long time to find my footing. It took me a long time to deal with a lot of the internal things that were keeping me stuck. A lot of self-sabotage, some in more intense ways. You know, I have a story of addiction recovery, and then some in more of the business ways of like constantly changing my mind or not really charging enough or, you know, never planning for the future, but always winging it. You know, all those little things are just sort of adding together, but really it's just a picture of someone who felt so vulnerable in the process of creating and being seen and what could happen there. And so, and then even if you look at it from that shaming perspective of like success is like the most terrifying thing. And so, you know, just really kept myself in this state of scarcity. It wasn't until I really immersed myself, I suppose, in my own journey of growth and healing my self-sabotage and even recovery work that I started to really gain some traction. But then that I also realized that I could help people with this. And I think when you have a story where like you have really had to encounter your own darkness, even in the aspects of not even just like things that you have experienced, but even things that you've done, I think anyone who has ever struggled with addiction, there is there's an element of that of like, I have done these things that I'm not okay with, or I have hurt people and I'm not okay with it. When you like go to that depth of self-exploration, and it can feel, depending on what it is, like it can feel isolating, it can feel like, why is no one talking about this? Or it can feel like, you know, specifically for me, because I was a woman in sex addiction. So like, it's a very not talked about thing. And so, you know, as you can see, even just hearing that, you can see like the different patterns of shame that are sort of like being pulled out from that. But you come out of experiences like that and you come out with like this desire and this commitment and really almost a conviction to you journey with people into the same spaces where you couldn't find people to journey with you in. It wasn't even instantaneous for me, but in January of 2019, I did an experiment where I did 28 coaching calls for free in 1 month. And I realized that this is what it was, that I could help people heal their self-sabotage. And from that, it was almost like, I think because of the journey that I had walked myself internally, there was so much inside of me that it was now just about like pulling it out, and how can we turn this into how can we turn this into a framework? How can we turn this into transformational work? And then once I found it, I was like, this is what I was born for. You know, I have, you know, struggled like for so long to figure out like, what is my thing? And I think there had always been elements of this stuff present, but when I found it, I was like, this is it.
Okay. So a couple of things. Wow. That was, that was so good. Okay. I want to pull out a few things. So the first one is, I love the 28 coaching calls. Yeah. And just doing it and seeing what happens, because here's a mistake I made early on, was I had all of these ideas of things that I thought I wanted to do, be an interior designer. Maybe I wanted to be a coach. Maybe I wanted to be a sales consultant, all these things. And I would just think about them. And I'd be thinking about like, oh, what would my logo be? What would my tagline be? Like, how would I help people? I'm thinking like 10 years down the road. And I'm like, I don't know what you want to do. And I don't know if you had any of that, but I think the takeaway for that I could have used sooner in my own life, and in case anybody else can too, is just that action does bring clarity. Yeah. So I love the lessons from that. And then I want to ask you a question. So with your own addiction story, and I think that is probably what makes you one of the many reasons that makes you so good at what you do, is because you've been, you know, in a hard place and maybe felt at the bottom. And so you're able to have that empathy and relate to other people. On social media specifically, I talk about this, and I hear other discussions around like vulnerability and how much is too much, and what parts of your story. What's your take on that? Like, how do you advise, help your clients to show up authentically, share vulnerable things, but without doing it necessarily for a like, if that makes sense?
Yeah. So I have a couple of things.
Okay.
One, so I have a couple of boundaries that I always keep in mind. So one, like, have I already processed this, or is this me processing for the first time?
Okay.
That's one for sure. Another one is looking at like, why am I doing this? What am I hoping to get out of this? If it's like, I'm hoping to find a level of comfort here, I'm hoping to find soothing here, then I know that it's not to share. That there are other places and spaces where I can find soothing and comfort. If it's more to share, like to inspire maybe, or to remove shame even, you know, those types of things, then I feel confident and comfortable that I can. Mm. One of the exercises that I would probably encourage people with it too is like, because a big thing in my work that I share with people is there's always like multiple parts of us going on at one time. And sometimes parts of us are louder than others. And so, you know, even the way that I approach self-sabotage really has to do with like the interacting of different parts, which is how self-sabotage sort of happens, because sometimes the parts inside of us can be on different missions. So for example, like, you know, if you're like, I want to launch a course, but then you have like this vulnerable part of you that's like, no courses, like, I'm scared that like people won't take us seriously or whatever. And then the self-sabotage kind of says, don't worry, let's get this girl overthinking and then she won't do the online course. So like there, and that's why, you know, sometimes you can have this feeling of like, why do I keep doing this? I don't want to do this. Why do I keep doing this? It's because there's different parts of you that you might not be aware of or tuned into that are really feeling afraid or vulnerable or overwhelmed. So when you're looking at this, sharing vulnerably on social media, to me, it would be a question of, is all of me okay with this? How does all of me feel about posting about this on social media? How does my like inner child feel about this? How does my self-sabotage feel about this? How do I feel this in this moment? Am I getting it? Do I feel pressure to do it? Am I doing it because, you know, because of the likes or because of the comments? Do I feel safe here? Because what will also happen is if just from a self-sabotage perspective, if like not all of you is on board, but like let's say, for example, like me, let's say you have a real like go-getter self, you're like, this is what we're gonna do. We're gonna do this because like maybe we might get more followers from this, or people need to hear our story, brand messaging, whatever. But what if there's this vulnerable part of you that's being like, I don't feel comfortable, like I don't feel okay sharing about this. And so then what might happen is that you'll share it, but then this part of you will feel overwhelmed and triggered, and it'll actually activate self-sabotage. Because self-sabotage is all about bringing yourself back into a sense of safety. So that's how easy, I just wanted to share that too, because that's how easy sometimes it can be for the self-sabotage to activate anytime like there's this vulnerable part of you that doesn't feel safe. You know, that's when the self-sabotage jumps in and says, I got this, like we can figure this out. And so stepping back and checking in and saying like, how do I actually feel about this? When I like sit with all of me, with the wholeness of me, how do I feel about sharing about this? And if all of you is like, yeah, let's share about it, then you know, like go to town. But if there's like hesitation and stuff, either tend to that inside or bring assurance or care, or maybe it's just not time to share about it yet, and maybe a little bit more support needs to be in place.
Okay, can I ask you something, Ashley? Does self-sabotaging ever go away forever? Or do you just get better at managing it?
It can heal. Because once you heal, you know, as you continue to heal, specifically the inner child or the vulnerable parts of you, it relieves your need for a protector because your inner child learns that it's safe to be with you.
You also do you so you help with self-sabotage, and then I know that you also help students with creating a slow business. I want to hear more about that because so much of what is out there is about quick business. It seems like quick business practices. And some of us maybe are three, sevens, eight out there who have that assertive energy, like that feels maybe more aligned. And then other types don't always feel like, oh, maybe entrepreneurship isn't cut out for me. But what does that mean to you? And I have some follow-up questions around the different Enneagram types around that.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So it started actually to form for me where I was like, I really want to do a business in a way that is supportive, in a way that I feel really cared for. I think I had discovered for myself that this pace of doing business, you know, this constant drive and whatever, that I never felt cared for. Ne I never felt cared for by my business. I always felt like I had to sacrifice myself and my well-being to succeed. And I just knew, like, I just felt like there's got to be a different way of doing things where I can prioritize my mental health, my well-being, and care for self. You know, and obviously with some of this other work that I do, that is clearly very important to me. And so I just started to explore for me what that would look like. And I knew for sure that that would mean going slow. And so I think people can pursue slow business for a lot of different ways, like a lot of different reasons. But I would say that's more my reason. Some people do it more like they just really value intentionality or the life that they're wanting to create outside their business. Like maybe they really resonate with even things like slow living and sustainability and, you know, those types of things. Or they really, you know, want to, you know, really have their business revolve around their family. All of those like different pieces also can be motivation and desire for slow business. How I would define slow business for me is just cultivating an intentional, supportive business that prioritizes your well-being and your desire for living. Without feeling like business or the pursuit of success has to overwhelm or cause you to disconnect or sacrifice all of those things. And so that's going to look so different depending on what your vision for living is or depending on what you're wanting your business to revolve around. But I think at the very core of it is like, how can we set this up in a way that cares for me. And that can get really specific, like even like how you plan your day, when you take calls, what are your boundaries, you know, little things like that.
Yeah. Okay. And maybe that's a question. Maybe we go from here is, yeah, what are some of those things like setting boundaries? And I'm so glad that we're having this conversation, because even for myself, you know, selfishly, I'm sitting here like, you know, thinking of my own questions that personally I want to know, because there is such, I think it's definitely shifting. I've noticed a shift in the last year or two away from like hashtag hustle harder, the hustle girl boss, coffee mug. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just like, what are the other options? Mm-hmm. And I love that you're providing another option. So regardless if that resonates with you or not, I think at some point you do have to rest or you burn out. Yeah. So what are some practices that you would recommend? I know you mentioned like setting schedules, but anything other like tangible tips that have really helped you create that intentional business that you run and doesn't run you?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and two, I think I just want to mention too, like, you know, sole businesses, that doesn't mean that you never hustle or that you never work hard, but it's more about having boundaries around the hustle. When you do, or, you know, I like to use the word more, work intentionally. When you work intentionally, you know where it's going, like, you know where your energy and action is going, versus just like, you're like working all the time, like what's even happening, you know? And so I think the biggest thing for me was really focusing in on profit generation. Mm. What happened to me before was that, you know, I was like, I would be working all the time and be hustling all the time in different ways. But I was never really making that much money, or I was never getting the momentum of making a significant amount of money. Or I would like have a moment where I would, and then like, you know, the classic like up and down. And then when I really started to look at like profit generation, and specifically really focusing on tasks that help me generate profit, really helped me to stay in the place of working intentionally versus working all the time. Mm-hmm. And really just being clear on what those things are and cutting out the things that aren't. Because if you're like, I want to, you know, pursue a slower business, you know, maybe I want to work less, then you're going to need to be very specific and very clear about when you're working, what you're working on. And you're going to want to fill that time with stuff that actually helps you make the money so that you can have a business that supports your life. And so, you know, whether that's like taking sales calls or posting on Instagram or writing content or doing collaborations, you know, things like that. But for me, even cutting out things like doing a lot of free calls or I don't know. Okay, this is really weird. I've never met anyone else who did this, but I used to get stuck in this cycle where I would go through every day, I would go through and I would archive every Instagram DM. Why? Well, one of it's because I love an empty inbox and I hate that you can't move them so that they're empty.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Mass select them. Oh, it's the worst. But I'm very on top of my email inbox and I love the look of an empty inbox. And so these Facebook messages and Instagram DMs, I'm like, I spend like hours getting rid of them.
Oh my God. You would hate my phone then. I have like red alerts of like unread messages. Yeah,
I was like, get rid of these notifications.
Well, and I think, it's that intentionality, like whatever you call it, it's being intentional. And what I love about what you're saying is like, it's not like, oh, here, do this strategy, this tactic. It's like, well, first you got to know what you want. And that I think is something that is basic. I don't know what your experience is. If you have any other thoughts on this, please share them here. But people get like see a strategy that worked for somebody else. And then they're going to like ride on that without ever considering what they actually want their life, their day-to-day to look like. How many hours do you want to work? Like, what is your goal for yourself in 20 years? Who do you want to be with? How do you want to feel? Yeah. And we just like get wrapped up in like shoulds. I should be doing this. I should be doing more without ever stopping and be like, well, like, what do I want? Even if it's not that same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like really prioritizing a connection to self.
Yes.
I think that's really paramount. I always think of too, there was like a, you know, there's those like specific Instagram posts that you see everywhere. But I remember seeing one that was like sort of like the idea, be careful not to start chasing goals that were never yours to begin with.
Yes, that like that's what a should is like a goal that's not yours or something like that. I've heard that too, but yeah, same concept.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, that's definitely happened to me where suddenly you wake up and you're like, why am I doing this? Why do I care?
Yeah. Why am I starting a YouTube channel? I don't even know.
And I mean, I think we can pick those up from social media, but sometimes we can also, I mean, we could have picked those up from parents. Like we could have picked those up from school, even things that are acceptable or conventional in society. I think doing like a check-in every once in a while and saying like, looking at what I'm going after, what I'm pursuing, is this coming from me? Does this align with my vision for how I want my life to look? Or did I somehow pick this up somewhere? Because I feel like it can happen so easily. With the level of information, like probably more than any other generation that we consume through TV, movies, social media, internet, it could be so easy for those things to come inside and say, chase me. So I think checking in every once in a while, like every couple months even, and just saying like, is this what matters to me? And is this me? Or have I picked something up along the way?
So good. Okay. I have one more question and I want to ask you some specific business related questions, but, and this kind of falls into that category, but I think your last post was around anxiety around posting on social media. And this has been what I started my own business with, is helping people create messaging and content around social media. And it was such, I experienced this personally, and I know like every single one of my clients had some sort of either like frantic posting, just kind of throwing things up, or completely frozen because of fear of other people's opinions. And so what advice do you have? What kind of things should we be thinking about? Because I do think that there's benefits, and maybe you could share the benefits of staying connected on social media, if that feels good, but then also how to balance that with our own kind of well-being.
Yeah, this does really relate to the last question, because I think it's about looking at, like, one, saying, like, do you want to be on social media? Like, realizing that choice gets to be yours. That you can build businesses outside of social media, and there might not be a ton of people that really modeled that, but there are people who model it, and it is possible. And businesses were way successful before social media, so it's definitely possible. So one, ask yourself that, because I think sometimes people feel like they can't not be on it, but you could if you wanted. You would just have to work differently. But then two, also looking at, where does most of your business come from right now? Is it mostly coming from Instagram, etc.? Then realizing that that's an important aspect of it for you. So for example, like for me, that's it. Like I would say 90% of my clients come through Instagram. So it's obviously something that I feel focused on, and that it's really beneficial for me to be super engaged on that platform. But I only really focus on Instagram. And I do not have time for these other platforms. Whenever a new platform comes along, I'm like instantly so annoyed. Like, no, I will not join, and I will not be a part of this. But just becoming really clear on where you're getting, and that right is too a part of what I had been sharing about profit generation, being very clear, where's the profit coming from, and really putting all your energy into that. Of course, being willing to try other things. If you feel called to that. And then, so I think that's where the benefits are, you know, are really going to come in. Obviously, you know, post it on social can bring in those leads, it can bring in the sales, can help you build relationships, get exposed to other incredible audiences and communities. And so, you know, that is an important aspect of it. But I think even over the last couple of years, social media has become more and more of a vulnerable place. I think what we, you know, have been seeing, you know, with things around people being canceled or called out in a mob-like fashion, even if you know you're witnessing that happening and you know that you don't have an audience of that size, or you know that you're probably not, you know, your intention is not to say those types of things, just even witnessing that happening in front of us affects us, that impacts us. And I would argue it to some degree, it's traumatic to witness. Mm-hmm. And of course it would make us more afraid that those things are gonna happen. And I don't think we had seen it. We haven't seen it to the extent that we've seen it in the last couple of years. And so some of it is so important, right? Some of the topics are so important, et cetera, but also just really validating and recognizing the fear of, like, not only could I be judged, not only could I be criticized, but I could be ostracized, I could be cut out, I could be canceled, I could have everything taken from me that I've worked so hard to build. And I think, especially if you already have pre-existing stories and experiences where you didn't belong, or where you were abandoned, or, you know, things like that, like, those really play into social media in a way that we don't always explore. And so being really kind and gentle with yourself in that process, but also just realizing, like, social media is a vulnerable place right now. And so if you're feeling overwhelmed, if you're feeling anxious, how can you care for yourself in that experience versus just pushing it down and telling yourself, we have to post to be visible?
I'm going to link this post that you had, because you had specific journal questions. I thought it was so good, so helpful. So that'll be in the show notes here. So the other thing that we were talking about before I hit record was you have this really fun quiz, and this idea of a freebie is like, I don't know what happens to us when we start our business, but it's like, oh my God, I got to design my logo and then I need to create my freebie. Yeah. And I can't start taking any clients. I can't do anything until I get these things in place. And, which, you know, again, hello, guilty as charged, but you have this really engaging quiz and you've developed it yourself. And I just thought it would be great for listeners to hear, like, a really tangible idea for something that they could take to better get to know their audience and to build their list. So walk us through, like, why you decided to do a quiz, how to get started. What do we need to know?
Yeah. So I always had a quiz in my mind for, like, years, because I was like, quizzes are so fun. Like, mm-hmm. I love taking quizzes. Basically, if you are into the Enneagram, I already know you're going to love taking a quiz. Because when you take a quiz, it can really create an experience of, like, I feel seen, I feel known, I feel understood. And that's why I loved the idea of a quiz, because, like, those are some of my biggest core values of how to sort of make people feel. And it also can bring people back. Like, there's a level of nostalgia to it. Like, when you were a teenager and you're like, the quizzes in, like, Teen Vogue, or I don't know, whatever you read. And so I knew I wanted to do one, but it actually took me a while to figure out, like, what to do one on. And then when I started to get into the strata self-sabotage work, I just knew, like, that I wanted to do one on self-sabotage types. My quiz, I ended up, like I had mentioned before we hit record, I had paired I had come up with 8 self-sabotage types that I had seen most common in people, clients, and just in living life and knowing people. In fact, there's some types that are inspired by family members. And I told them.
That's so good.
And then I paired the 8 types with different Enneagram types to help me form a lot of the questions, and ended up, there's a whole strategy that sort of went into, like, you know, the creation of the questions and the results and putting it into the software with Interact and creating a post experience of the quiz, etc. But then I put it out there, and the results were like wild. Like I think within, I don't know, it was like within 30 days or something, I had like 5 to 6,000 people take the quiz.
Ashley, wow. Wow. Okay. Yeah. And you were just promoting it on social media to your email list?
Yeah, well, I did a little bit of a marketing thing where I had like a little bit of like an influencer strategy. And so okay. I had around 30 people, me and a bunch of influencers specifically who have audiences that would be interested in healing self-sabotage. And I had us all share about it on one day. Then at the same time, I also did a giveaway for a weighted blanket, something that someone who's healing for self-sabotage would really want. That seemed like a bit more of an expensive gift, like versus like, I'm giving away a pen.
You know? Right.
I don't care, I'll buy a pen. And so that also helped, like, because I was like, you know, tag someone in the comments to take the quiz with you. And I sort of did create a mini viral effect with the quiz. And what I love about quizzes too, so the way that I approach quizzes, and I led a workshop that I'm actually teaching or transforming into a course called the Supportive Quiz. So it's all about how can you use a quiz to really support your audience. And not only have it be like this, like amazing opt-in, but like actually a supportive tool for them. And so it was about like really looking at that, how to also just really create that supportive experience. But then it also supports me in running a slower business because I have this thing that's always like working on my behalf and that I haven't really touched it since. And I've had it up for over a year, and you know, people just keep taking it.
Wow. Okay, when does your course launch for that?
In early November.
Early November. Okay, do you have a wait list?
No, but I should make one.
I was like, I need to get on that wait list, number one. And here's something else that I just want to highlight for anybody who is listening. You know, it's like exciting, the thought of like building a course, and there's so many people out there teaching how to build a course, but I love what you just shared. And I don't even know if you realized it, but it's like, I did a workshop first and then it went really well. And now I'm training into a course. Just really quickly. I mean, how did that work? So what inspired you to turn it into a course? Like how many times did you run it? Any advice for anybody looking to start a course? What should we be thinking about before we do that?
So yeah, I'm really into doing beta workshops. I've done them multiple times. I don't have any courses up right now, but even just to explore a topic. Yes. So even with healing self-sabotage, I had originally had a membership before my SEEN program that I have right now. And I did a workshop first, a paid workshop, how to heal your self-sabotage, to help me explore the content and teach the content and see how people respond and whatever. And it's such a low pressure way of doing things. I'll even do it so low pressure that like, sometimes it's just like, I'll put up a DM that says, I'm doing this workshop. Do you want to be a part of it? And I don't have to worry about like making it super flashy or anything until I can see like if the curriculum and the content is going to resonate and land. And so I did that with the quiz, and I definitely would advise that to anyone who's looking at it, because then it also helps you to make money while you create content for the course.
So smart. I'm like, oh, I'm loving you. Okay. So I have three rapid fire questions for you, but one last question before we do the rapid fire.
Sure.
So any other like final words, final thoughts for those business owners or aspiring entrepreneurs who maybe don't have that 3, 8, 7 type energy that's like really assertive, kind of sometimes aggressive, that tend to maybe think that, oh, maybe I'm not a natural leader. You're clearly rocking it. You're doing incredible work. What should those types know about you know, stepping into a leadership role in an online community, becoming a go-to expert, whatever it might be, becoming a business owner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like really reminding yourself that you don't have to change who you are to be successful, and find people that are like you, mm-hmm. that are successful or having impact through their work or whatever. Like, really surround yourself with those people, even if it's just like following them on social media or something like that, or jumping on email lists, because I think what it does is it normalizes and it gives you, it sort of gives you different models of how business can be done. But I think really offering yourself a lot of permission, and like I even mentioned at the beginning, of really leaning into what are the strengths that make you you. For example, like, just to give it from this example, for me, like, when I'm looking for a coach, I do not want anything, almost always don't want anything to do with people who have that intense energy. When I'm looking for a coach, like, I want someone who's like super grounded, super gentle, like creates a lot of space, creates a lot of room. One who notices things, who can move slow enough to really notice things inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're someone who like resonates maybe more with a slower or a gentler or a quieter way of doing things, to know that you might be actually the person that these more intense types need, because you're different than them, and you can create space for them that they can't create for themselves.
I can attest to that. Yes. It's being somewhere maybe more of that like hyper type of energy. Sometimes it is like, so it feels so good to be around somebody who is a little bit more, you know, ground, exactly what you're saying, calming.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel that. Yeah. And that's great. It's a great reminder. So where do you, I know you mentioned Instagram, where are you on Instagram? Anything else before we get to the rapid fire questions about getting the quiz? Where can people get their hands on that?
Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram at Ashley.Bowden. Come say hi if you listen to this. And then you can take the quiz at ashleybowden.com/quiz. But I feel like I made it really clear that earlier question that I'm really only on Instagram. So that's where you'll find me.
Love that. Okay. So what's something that you are learning yourself right now?
I've really been in a process of learning how to accept and embrace all parts that make me me.
Mm.
I think we, you know, all have aspects of self that we don't love as much, or that have caused us problems or whatever. And I'm learning to embrace myself in all those aspects. And I actually recently got a tattoo. Like, I got it last week. So you can see it on my Instagram, but it represents that very thing of really embracing all parts of me.
Mm-hmm. And what about something that you've had to unlearn or you're working to unlearn?
Yes, I've had to unlearn a lot of things. I feel like one of the things that I've had to do a lot of unlearning around is this is going to be really specific, so I don't know if anyone will resonate with it, but the way that I grew up was that it was me and my sister, and we're 13 months apart, and we kind of grew up sort of twin-like, and we were given very specific roles, but we were never the same at once. And so it was like, she was like, you know, good with money, I'm bad with money. She was good at cooking, I'm bad at cooking. I was good at school, she was bad at school. Like, it was like we were never given the space to be successful or fail at the same thing. And it's wild, like, especially with something like that where it's so internalized as a child, like a lot of that stays with me, and I have all these rules in my head almost of like, I can never be good at that. And I've been in a huge process of unlearning So for example, like through quarantine, I really started cooking, and realized that I loved it and that I was really good at it, and I'm just like breaking those rules one at a time. I also, this is not related at all, but I just had it pop into my head. I have a tip for four. If there are any
Yes, please
listen.
share.
One of the things that has helped me the most within business as a four as well is because I can get so stuck in my head and maybe some emotionally and some of the patterns of feeling like, oh no, am I gonna be rejected or am I gonna belong, et cetera, is to really like use a lot of practices where I'm using my hands because they really like ground me. So I've been doing like so much like cooking, puzzling, journaling, and it sort of creates a space for you to get space from some of those emotional wonderings and thoughts and allows you to come back to more of a grounded place. But what I realized that when I was like, oh, if I just do things that use my hands that help me, like it helps me like get into my body and outside of my head or heart, it really changed things for me. So I wanted to mention it.
That's a great advice for especially even five, six, seven to tend to like be in their head a lot too. That is such, I'm so glad you brought that up. Okay, last question. What is a book that you would recommend? It can be a business book, it can be something about self-sabotage, any recommendation that you have for us.
It's so funny when people ask me this question because I don't really have favorite. I don't really have like a ton of favorite books. And I read like a lot of books that have nothing to do with this stuff. I never read business books for one, almost never. Now I think that partly might be a type four thing because I'm like, whatever they tell me, I'm not gonna want to do it anyway, because I do everything different. But in terms of personal development, if you're looking at like, there's some books that I have found really helpful. Like, I think it's called Homecoming by, now I'm not even remembering anything, but it's
I
about
think
like,
I saw that on your website.
Also, there's a book called When the Past Becomes the Present. It looks more at like relational patterns and how we will try and heal relational wounds through current relationships, but we just keep repeating patterns. That book is incredibly eye-opening because I would argue that even business is really all about relationships. And then if you're into like some of what I shared about parts, there's a new book called No Bad Parts. And it's by the founder or originator of the internal family systems method, therapeutic method. But it's all about that, about the different parts that show up for us and how to reclaim some of those vulnerable parts and how to work with those parts and realize like there are no bad parts of you.
Okay, I wrote both of those down. Those sound amazing. Ashley, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate all that you've shared. And I do hope that if you've listened to this, you will say hi to Ashley, let her know. And then she shared a lot of great resources and additional information that we'll make sure gets included in the show notes. But Ashley, I appreciate you, and I will see you around Instagram, I'm sure.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Real quick before you go, if you got anything from today's episode, whether it be an aha around the Enneagram type or a part of their story that really resonated with you, reach out and let them know. I know as a podcast guest myself, that means the world to hear from somebody who listened to the episode, got something from it, and then took the time to follow up and let me know. I'm also going to ask you another favor. If you haven't already, subscribe and leave a review for this podcast. And when you do, because I know that you're busy, as a thank you for your time and your effort to do that, I'm going to send you a type-specific reference guide. It's 25 to 30 pages all about your dominant Enneagram type, how it shows up, and what to do with it. And then I'm also going to send you an invitation to a live training we're doing at the end of the month around your CEO style, how your type shows up in leadership and building your business, building your marketing strategies, how to leverage your strengths, blind spots to watch out for. So that's going to be really fun. If you're listening to this after August 2021, still email me and I'll send you the link to the replay. My email address is hello@sarahlynnco.com. Again, that was hello, Sarah, SarahLynnco.com. Thanks for being here, and I'm looking forward to hanging out again soon.